And we're live.
Hello and welcome back to another Where the Fuck Is My Wedding Video episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
This is Walter Ritchie.
This is Romano Da Silva.
Welcome back, Romano.
Thanks, man.
Yay. What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback, we'd like to thank Jairo Benavides for his feedback on our Zero Dark Thirty episode.
What do you have to say?
Well, he wrote a long email, but here are some excerpts. I'm new to the show and I'm really digging your style. While I really enjoy your podcast, I must say that I can't disagree more with Tim on Zero Dark Thirty. However, I can only partially agree with Wally's opinion. The movie is certainly boring. However, it isn't boring when compared to The Hurt Locker. It is boring just like The Hurt Locker.
Oh, I don't agree there. I disagree, sir.
Bigelow is recycling another of Hollywood's cliched characters. First, she recycled Martin Riggs, the crazy wild man in a responsible position in The Hurt Locker. Now she's recycling the Erin Brockovich character that is swimming upstream against a current of men. This movie is filled with numerous grossly exaggerated moments. The outburst in the meeting with Panetta is a glaring example.
Oh, I agree with that.
That took me right out of the movie. The simple fact that the movie sells the audience that this woman is the primary reason that America was able to get UBL is not only ludicrous, it is offensive. This movie casts aside the hard work that so many members of the intelligence community in favor of spoon-feeding the audience. She did the same in The Hurt Locker. These two movies were so over the top that with the dramatizations that audible groans were rampant during both. Love the podcast, fellas, and I can't wait to hear your next episode. Got any reaction to that?
Yeah, I agree. The movie is still fucking boring. a bunch of talking heads talking, just dropping names. And one thing I wanted to mention too is this whole like, oh, does it make torture look effective? There's 5 minutes of total screen torture in this movie. Five. That doesn't color the rest of the movie.
But also, it doesn't.
If you show me repeated images of torture over and over again, then I'd be like, oh, maybe you got a point.
But even so, I think the movie, as I mentioned in our episode, it's amoral as to whether it does or does not condone torture.
I don't even think it plays into it.
Exactly. Okay.
The other thing I didn't mention that I really didn't appreciate. I'm not sure why they portrayed these individuals this way, but I felt like the way they portrayed the SEAL team, they kind of portrayed them like they were like juvenile, like jocks. Like they were just kind of like just assholes. Like I couldn't get behind them. Like I know they're doing something heroic, but I don't know if this is a spoiler. Just the way they react to each of their kills just really came off as like a bunch of douchebags. Because they're not treating, even though these people are, I don't know that all these people are like, you know, completely, you know, criminals, but maybe they're innocent and they're treating them like.
In that situation, you can't make judgments like that.
No, I'm not saying they should spare people or anything like that, but just the way that the outcome, I mean, what happens, happens, and then the way they react to it just came off really douchey. Like, I was just like, I don't know what she was going on. Maybe she met these guys and, like, these guys are douchebags. I'm going to betray them like douchebags.
Because I disagree with you.
And I kind of actually agree with Wally, man. That mission seemed like a big clusterfuck. Like, they're like, planning for it, and they're like, we got to be super quiet. We got to go in there. And,
but like, it happened like that.
I guess, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it just seemed really clunky, and like them going in there was just super loud. And I'm like, how the fuck didn't everyone just run out to the roof and be like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
because I think they knew better not to run out than be exposed.
I guess, but I mean, it just.
Wait, what were they hoping to have happen? Like, you would just maybe they won't find us. They're blowing up all the doors to this building, right? Maybe they won't find us.
And it just felt like they were playing hide and seek. Like they were just like calling out people's names, and I was just like, is this really what happened? Like they're just like. Osama, like that, and I'm just like, really? It seems like they're playing a kids game or something. Like I'm like, I don't know. That seemed kind of a little weird, but I still don't think it's a bad movie. I wasn't bored. I was just kind of not just watching a movie, and then I walked out, and I was just like, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Obviously, you know how I feel about it. Thank you, Jairo, I think that's how you say your name, or is it Jairo? I'm sure it's Jairo. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name.
Jiro?
Who knows? It's J-A-I-R-O.
J-A-I-R-O?
And his last name is Benavides, so I'm sure
it's probably Jairo. I'm thinking it was like an Asian.
Thank you for your feedback, and we really appreciate it, and I hope you keep listening. In this episode, we will be discussing David O. Russell's Oscar contender, Silver Linings Playbook. But before we get into that, we will be foregoing Yay or Nay and Trilla Hitches for something a little bit different. We will be giving our top three most anticipated movies of 2013. Anything you guys have to say before we get into it?
I guess at first, like, I was going through the list of, you know, what's coming up on in 2013. Nothing's really... There are a few movies that jump out at me, but overall, nothing that I'm like, I've got to see this movie! So I'm going to base my top three off of stuff that's caught my attention now that I want to follow up on and actually get to watch when it comes out.
As soon as you told me what we were going to be doing, the first three popped into my head instantly. Like, I didn't even have to think that hard about
well,
it.
Thankfully,
I
we don't have a Batman film coming out by Christopher Nolan.
Suck it, Tim.
Okay, Wally, you want to start?
All right, I'm going to start with number three, Pain and Gain.
Oh, God.
This is Michael Bay's non-Transformer foray, and I've got high hopes for this movie, Tim. I think it's Michael Bay returning back to Michael Bay form, where he's not abusing, you know, a beloved childhood property.
So Armageddon and The Rock form?
Yeah, kind of like kind of. I'm thinking like Bad Boys form, because this reminds me more of like Bad Boys. Mark Wahlberg.
Wahlberg.
It's The Mask. Dwayne The Rock Johnson. this movie looks just like it's going to be just a shit ton of fun. I'm dying. I'm going to have to research what the actual story is, you know, behind it. Because, you know, they keep flashing on this, you know, on the screen whenever the trailer runs is, you know, it's, you know, it, this is a true story or it's all true. So I'm curious to see.
It takes place in the 80s, I guess, or the early 90s.
The early 90s, yeah.
And it looks like, yeah, because they were driving like a Pontiac Fiero at
one
point. Yeah,
driving a Fiero.
Which I really appreciated.
So, it's Michael Bay. And as much as I hate what he's done with the Transformers, I actually like a lot of Michael Bay's other movies.
Sure, me too.
That aren't Transformers.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to see him kind of go back to like his old form, which is going to be just like a fun. It's coming out in March.
Let's see here. April.
April. So it's going to be a spring release.
April 26th, yeah.
So, I mean, it'll be a nice kickoff, you know, to the better weather. You know, so, you know, go see something fun and probably just take your brain out, put it in the jar, turn it off for a little while. Enjoy, you know, some crazy action, mad explosions. I'm looking forward to this. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Fair enough. Romano.
My number three is Man of Steel. what can I say? Superman and Batman, my two favorite comic book superheroes. I'm usually trying to balance the two. Like, you know, I think they're both great. But as far as movies go, I think Batman's definitely had the better movies. But I'm looking forward to this one because you got Christopher Nolan producing, you got Zack Snyder directing, and I think, you know, Zack Snyder's kind of hit and miss for me, but I think he did a fucking phenomenal job with Watchmen, the only other comic book property I think he did, other than, well, 300 as well, but, you know, as far as comic book properties that he's done, I've loved both of them, so, I mean, I really look forward to see what he does in Superman, and I'm not even one of these haters that hated the Ryan Singer Superman. I mean, I don't love it, but I
yeah,
think there are
not,
elements there that were good. I think they just took a misstep with one of the main elements of the movie, which is the kid.
Yeah.
I think if that was left out, the movie would have been a good classic, you know, action comics, you know, Superman.
It would have been a good reboot because basically they got kind of retold Superman 1.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of good things in the movie. I don't totally shit on it, but I'm looking forward to see what, you know, Zack Snyder is going to bring to the table.
The thing I am most anticipating about this, I can say in four words, Michael Shannon, General Zod.
I also look forward to that as well. I like to see what you know he's gonna bring to the table because I mean Terrence Stamp made that character super iconic. So,
yeah.
Let's see what he can do. So yeah, Man of Steel.
My number three most anticipated movie is something that's been pushed back from this previous year from 2012 for unknown reasons, and that is G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Oh, I can tell you the reasons.
Well, yeah, no, for awful reasons, I should say.
Yes.
But supposedly, maybe there were some acting issues that they had to do reshoots. I don't know. Either way, I was really disappointed they pushed it back from summer of 2012 to March 28th of 2013. And G.I. Joe Retaliation, I am like one of the few people that really enjoy the first movie, the first G.I. Joe movie, because it is what the Transformers movies should have been, a live-action cartoon. That's exactly what it was. And they found the perfect director at the time, Stephen Sommers, who did the Mummy movies, To direct that movie. I loved it. I thought it was so much fun. I was j when I was watching in the theater, you guys know this, I was jumping in my seat doing a thumbs up the whole time. This one looks like a whole lot more fun based on the trailers, especially having Bruce Willis in it and The Rock. I mean, come on, that's
Well,
awesome.
this one looks actually like it's actually going to be G.I. Joe this time around, as opposed to what we got the first time. And last podcast, I talked about going to see Hansel and Gretel. There's actually a 10-minute extended scene of Storm Shadow and Snake Eye fighting that I went, all right, you know what? I might have to come on board with this because this is
Cool.
actually kind of badass.
So that's my number three, G.I. Joe Retaliation. Wally, your number two most anticipated.
Pacific Rim.
Which is also my number two.
Oh,
Bam!
I knew that was coming. I love giant robots. I love anime. I love giant, robots fighting monsters. This movie looks like it's going to give me every single thing that I ask for. And I mean, granted, I've only seen the one trailer that's been released of it so far, but from that one trailer, I love the way the mechs look. The monster looks, the main looks like the main monster looks like it's going to be pretty badass. And this movie just looks like it's going to be a ton of fun.
I agree with everything Wally just said. I also grew up watching all these, cartoons with, giant robots in them, like Voltron and Transformers, fucking GoBots, Robotech, Guy King, all those things. And even, in the 90s and early 2000s, I was still watching things like Neon Genesis Evangelion, which
Yep.
is one of my favorite anime series, if not my favorite anime series of all time. And this movie just really, really resembles probably the closest thing it resembles to me is Neon Genesis
Yeah.
Evangelion. And this movie is probably the closest thing for years to come that I'm going to get to a live action version of that show. So I was completely on board right away. The first time I saw a giant robot in the trailer, I was like, I'm in.
You
I'm
two are
in.
a bunch of
I
geeks.
wish I was in that robot,
I
is
wish I was in that
what
robot too. I wish I had
I'm
that robot. Especially one with four arms. That thing looks awesome.
in. Yeah, so I mean, holy shit. And plus, you got Guillermo del Toro behind it, which I completely trust on
Yeah.
every level, as far as the director. And I'm a fan of Sons of Anarchy, and the main guy from that is in, I like him as, an actor and stuff like that. And you also got what's his name, the new Black James Bond there,
Idris Elba.
Idris Elba's in there, and I'm
Oh,
like,
here we
hell's
go
yeah,
again with
baby.
this.
So yeah, man, Pacific Rim, looking forward to
Well,
it.
yeah, the trailer, he looks like he's doing his best Bill Pullman from Independence Day.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Cool. So my number two most anticipated is kind of a who's cast of Richard Jenkins, James Wood, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Jason Clarke, Channing Tatum, and Jamie Foxx as President James Sawyer in Roland Emmerich's White House Down. And this movie sounds like a ton of fun. Secret Service agent is tasked with saving the life of the U.S. president after the White House is overtaken by a paramilitary group. Hey, I like Roland Emmerich movies as much as the next,
There's going to be wolves in this, Tim. You know this, right?
Okay.
Like the president's in trouble, and there's wolves.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. Every single. Look at Roland Emmerich. Tell me there's no wolves in it.
Independence Day, there's no wolves.
Oh no! Wolves in
I don't remember any in 2012.
it.
Okay, your theory's shot out the window.
No, it's not. I'm going to
Yeah, it
find
is.
these
I
wolves.
just Hans Grubered that shit right out the window.
Does
When
that
I
dog
can.
count? Dog is technically a descendant of a wolf.
Yeah, well, there's a dog in every single one of those movies.
Dude
Yes, I agree.
loves canines.
Anyways, White House Down sounds like a ton of fun. Summer, June 28th, 2013. Summer, turn off your brain and watch Channing Tatum try to save Jamie Foxx. Sure, why
It
not?
when you put it in
That's
those
two
terms,
Channing Tatum movies, Tim. What's going on? Got something you want to say?
That
When
is.
you when you
Wow,
when you
that's
put it in
crazy.
those terms, that this makes it sound like a comedy. Channing Tatum trying to save Jamie Foxx as the president. Oh man.
Okay, Wally, you're number one most
All right,
anticipated.
well, with my birthday right around the corner, I
Oh,
feel
wait a minute! Wait a minute now!
a need
Wait a
for
minute! This
speed.
doesn't count!
Yes, it does. It's
No,
released
it
in
doesn't!
2013.
This is a total
And
cheat!
I want to see this in 3D on an IMAX screen.
This is a total cheat!
This is Top Gun, the 3D IMAX release.
My
Oh,
God,
son of a
yes,
bitch,
son.
I've been waiting for this my entire life, and I got it for my 37th birthday. This is not a cheat. This is going to be watching Maverick and Goose and Iceman and Slider and Hollywood and Sundown. And they're all.
Hanging with the boys.
Don't care.
I
I can't wait to see that 3D beach volleyball scene, man.
Oh,
Oh, I know you
man.
can't. I can't wait to
I
see
want to see some
planes.
sweat flying off those dunes, just
I saw the
hitting me in the
trailer for it
face.
at Hansel and Gretel 3D, and I am in.
And what about like that scene when Val Kilmer bites his teeth in the locker room
We see
in
it's gonna be
3D?
giant Val Kilmer teeth on an IMAX screen in 3D. You gotta think he's gonna be biting your face.
That's funny.
Shit, yes.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Hollywood, for the birthday present.
Hermano, you're number one.
All right. This is for anybody who knows me, this should be the obvious pick. I love everything this director has done so far. I've gone back and watched all his movies, completely in love. Only God Forgives. Nicholas Winding Refn's new movie starring Ryan Gosling. I am super looking forward to this movie. Anybody that knows me knows I love fucking gritty movies, and that's all this dude has pretty much done. So, right up my alley. I guess I don't know that much about it. I'm trying to keep it that way.
Do you want me to tell you the plot synopsis?
I've read the plot synopsis, so
A
that's pretty.
Bangkok police lieutenant and a gangster settle their differences in a Thai boxing match.
That's all I need to know.
Starring Ryan Gosling, Kristin Scott Thomas, and Tom Burke,
Yep.
and others.
This could be interesting.
Well, Nicholas Winding Refn, yes, I'm anxious to see this as
Oh,
well.
dude, I've loved everything. I've gone back and watched the entire Pusher trilogy. I even liked Valhalla
Ugh.
Rising. I liked
You know you love
Bronson.
Drive.
Drive, I loved.
Have you seen Bronson yet,
I've
Will?
not seen
Oh my
Bronson yet.
God. You gotta
Yeah,
see it.
it's
Tom
out
Hardy.
there.
Tom Hardy at his best. I think
Yep.
that's the best I've ever seen Tom
And
Hardy.
speaking of Full Frontal,
I was like a lot of Full Frontal Tom Hardy in that movie.
But yeah, absolutely. Only God Forgives. It
May
actually,
23rd.
yeah, it got pushed back. I think it was actually supposed to be released
Oh,
last
wait.
year, and it made me super sad,
Actually, it
Chet.
says May 23rd in Denmark. Uh-oh.
Yeah, so I have no idea when it's going to be released. I
Oh,
heard
yeah.
maybe September, but
That's right.
hopefully sooner.
There is no release date yet so far.
Yeah, I can't see it going past 2013, so I'm going on hope that it actually comes out this year.
My number one is from the director of a movie that I think we all liked several years ago, District 9. And
Oh.
Neil Blomkamp's finally is following up with a movie with Matt Damon and Jodie Foster and Charlton Copley again, called Elysium.
How do you spell that?
E L Y S I U M.
Yes.
All right.
Looks like it's coming out on August 9th. And set in the year 2159.
Ooh, a day before my birthday.
What, 2159?
Yes. No, August 9th.
where the very wealthy live on a man-made space station while the rest of the population resides on a ruined Earth, a man takes on a mission that could bring equality to the polarized worlds. But hey, with Neil Blomkamp, with a successful sci-fi venture
Yeah, exactly.
in District 9, and Matt Damon, good actor.
How
Yeah,
much
it,
did this or nine like gross like in the box office? Was it like
right.
around for a while? I don't recall it doing that well in the box
Oh no,
office.
I
I
thought
think
it did
it I
pretty
think it was
well.
successful considering it only cost like 30
Yeah,
million.
it was like it made money, but
Yeah.
like
Maybe not like, 300 million, but I think it made a decent amount. And by
Yeah,
the way,
definitely.
the synopsis for this movie kind of sounds like if anybody's ever played
Battle
the
Angel.
yeah, I guess kind of in Final Fantasy VII.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like that.
District 9 made $115 million.
Yeah. Oh,
That's pretty
it
good.
made pretty much
On a
almost.
$30 million
Yeah,
budget.
I mean,
Yeah, it
it made most
quadrupled
of
its
the money
money
back.
pretty
Yeah.
well. You
So.
also have to help Peter Jackson for coming on as a producer later on in
Well, yeah. This
production
is yeah.
and
His name
marketing
on
that
it.
film,
Yeah.
you know. But I'm really looking forward to Elysium. I love sci-fi, and Matt Damon's proved himself as an action movie star in the Bourne movies, and he's a good actor otherwise, you know. And plus, if you've seen some set photos, he's completely shaved his head.
Yep.
Looks completely badass, you know, holding this awesome gun. So yeah, Elysium, awesome. All
It'd be a
right.
trip if you see the aliens from District 9 show up in Elysium at some point. That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be kind of cool. All right. Anything else you guys want to add to that, or are we ready to move on?
We
We
can
can
move
move
there's
on.
another, bunch of a number of, good movies that are gonna be coming out in 2013 that are worth anticipating, but these are just our, our top three that come, that come to our head first.
Okay, then let's move right on to our review of Silver Linings Playbook. The plot. After a stint in a mental institution, former teacher Pat moves back in with his parents and tries to reconcile with his ex-wife. Things get more challenging when he meets Tiffany, a mysterious girl with problems of her own. The writer and director, David O. Russell, The actors, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro, and Jackie Weaver. Wally, I'll ask you this. This is the first film in about 30 years, I think, to be nominated in six of the major Oscar categories: Best Supporting Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Actress, Best Actor, Best Director, and Best Picture. Do you think this film is worthy to be so enough to be so widely acclaimed?
This movie would have made my top 10, easily my top 3, if I had seen it before we did the review episode. I unabashedly love this movie.
Oh.
I walked into it not knowing what to expect. So I kind of walked in very, blank slated. And the characters in this movie are absolutely delightful. Bradley Cooper is awesome. Jennifer Lawrence, always easy on the eyes, but
Oh,
she's still
yes, she is.
she's still awesome. She's fantastic in what, in what she does. De Niro's is great. I can't praise this movie enough. So I would say by just by that alone, I think that it's certainly worthy of being in contention for Best Picture, best directing, absolutely. Bradley Cooper, sure, best actor. Jennifer Lawrence, best actress, absolutely. Bring it on.
Cool. Hermano?
I totally agree with Wally. I mean, I had it in my my top 10 of the year. Agree with him. Bradley Cooper was awesome. I mean, I had reservations going to this movie. I kept hearing, and it was just like this little bee buzzing around my ear. Everyone just talking about how good this movie is. Oh, and now it's nominated for Best Picture, and it's nominated for all these categories. And I'm like, man, I gotta see this movie. Even though typically I would never seek out this movie and just run out to go see it,
Yeah,
but
same here.
I was able to see it, and I'm like, all right, let me check it out. I'll give it a chance. Going into it, still thinking I'm not gonna like this movie. It doesn't seem like my type of movie, and it surprised me. I was completely surprised. The performances are great. I think David Russell's direction is good once again. Similar to The Fighter, where he balances all these characters, and he does it in such a way where like everyone is given time to shine, and I don't feel like anyone outshined another person. Like I felt like they were all on equal levels of just amazing acting. Like I didn't feel like Bradley Cooper stole the show, or Robert De Niro, and it's the best I've seen Robert De Niro in a long time.
True.
You know, he was really good in this. Even Jackie Weaver. Did you guys see Animal Kingdom
I did.
from Australia? I love that movie. She was awesome in that. She doesn't have as much to do in this movie. I mean, she just mostly,
Make
tries to be
homemades.
hold her family together and just makes homemades.
Make homemades,
Well, it's
man.
interesting you mentioned Jackie Weaver because the thing that I came away with was that of all the people with the most problems in this movie, I think the person who comes off the worst in this movie is Jackie Weaver's character because she's the enabler in all of this. She enables everybody to continue what they how they are, how they act, you know? She does nothing to curb Robert De Niro's character from his OCD complexes, you know? She does nothing. She just enables him and brushes it aside and chuckles it aside, you know? Same thing with her son. Her son obviously was not ready to come out of that institution. It was not recommended for him to come out of the institution. She takes him after 9 months or 6 months or whatever.
I mean, she just plays like maybe that's just the way her character was supposed to be. I mean, she plays like the matriarch, like she's trying to hold her family together, and she seems like the only one. I know you say she comes off the worst, but she seems like the only one that doesn't have a mental
No,
problem.
she doesn't. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's something that could have been explored a little bit more. Maybe something hinted at a little bit more. But even though that she doesn't appear to have any mental issues like everybody else on screen, I still think that she comes off the worst and the least sympathetic.
No,
I don't
I kind of
completely
disagree
agree.
on that
Yeah, I
one.
don't completely agree with that. I mean, I do agree that she's sort of an enabler, but I think she means well, which most enablers do. But I just don't think she comes off looking bad in this movie. I mean, I don't really feel like anyone came off looking like especially bad to me.
Well, that
Like,
history professor.
well, he's kind
Well,
of a douche, yes, but I mean, you don't really get to know him. But
I know enough.
yeah, but I mean, I really can't speak to. I mean, I don't have any personal contact with anyone that deals with any of these issues, like OCD or any kind of mental issues. So I mean, for the most part, I feel like they played it pretty accurately. I mean, that's the best I can. I mean, the best I can say. I mean, I don't know anyone that has OCD. I mean, maybe mild OCD, but not like to the level of Robert De Niro, where he's like rearranging TV remotes and they have to be a certain way, and he really believes that.
Everything has an impact on the
Everything
outcome
has
of the
an
game.
impact on something that's going to happen in a Philadelphia Eagles game, and and stuff like that. And Bradley Cooper obviously has his issues where, you know, he's dealing with a separation from his wife, and you know, bringing what's her name,
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence's character, and she's also dealing with her own issues. And the one thing I will say about the movie that is that it starts off, I think, really good, and it's just like this big family drama going on, and I loved all those elements. But then it does kind of wrap up in a very romantic comedy kind of way, and I didn't appreciate that as much, but I couldn't really think of a better way to end it. You know, that made the audience leave happy.
Oh, well, if that's what the intention was, yeah. I think when you're writing this film, David O. Russell's writing the screenplay based on the novel. So, I wonder what the novel is like, written by Matthew Quick. You know, if there's a different ending, if there's anything, obviously different about it, or if David O. Russell changed anything to make it a happier ending. I don't know. I'd like to investigate that a little further, because you're right. With the ending, it just seems like it falls into a lot of cliches,
Yeah.
a lot of tropes.
And it was
And
everything I was fearing the entire movie was going to be.
right.
But I mean, you only got a little bit of that, and I definitely, I mean, if I had to break it down, it's 90% good for me, and then that last 10% is just typical cliche romantic comedy stuff.
There's a scene towards the end of the film, a confrontation scene, in the house, and I think that goes on a little bit too long. I think it's played for laughs a little too bit too much.
Though he's referring to the one with Jennifer Lawrence and Robert De Niro.
Yes,
The scene of the
well, and
car,
everybody there,
yeah, well, yeah, everybody's there, but them specifically, they're going back and forth.
based on a bet. Everything's based on a bet. I thought that scene went on for much too long, and that could have been tightened up a little bit, but I think that obviously had to go on as long as it did to in order to follow up the way it did. Let's go back to the acting in this. Bradley Cooper is amazing in this film.
I think it's the best thing I've ever personally seen him in.
It's funny you say that, because did you guys notice there was during the Halloween scene, when they're walking by a movie marquee, did you notice the movie that was on the marquee?
What was
It was
it?
Midnight Meat Train. That's a
Oh.
movie that
And he
Brad,
was
one of
in.
his first roles. It was pretty funny thing there. But yeah, Bradley Cooper is fantastic. He brings this I don't know, this level of believability to this illness, that this person has this illness, this hypermanic, illness. And in the film, they diagnose him with undiagnosed
Bipolar
bipolar
disorder and
disorder.
delusions.
But yeah, and so he was very manic. He was very up and down, up and
Yeah, his
down.
mood swings were all over the place.
Yeah, and he played it very believably, and it was quite impressive. And then, the dinner scene where he's introduced to Jennifer Lawrence, that was really well done,
Oh,
especially.
so awkward.
And a nice shit Julia Stiles
Yeah, I hadn't
show
seen
off.
her in a while, and I'm like, is that Julia Stiles?
That was nice to see her, completely opposite of any role she's been in, like the gold digging housewife, and then all the supporting roles in this film are really well done, especially Bradley Cooper's best friend, who's married to Julia Stiles, and how he's just desperate.
I hate my life.
That was great. Oh, also a nice Chris Tucker showing up.
That was awesome
Yeah,
because like it
because
was I didn't see it coming from, you know, I'm like, oh.
and he wasn't manic, his usual manic
He was
self, you
just
see in the
quiet,
Rush
nice and
Hour movies.
reserved. Nice and reserved. Wasn't like, do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
I mean, and yes, I agree with you about Robert De Niro. He brought the this you have to give credit to David O. Russell, because he obviously with The Fighter, which I don't remember when that came out, 09, I think, somewhere around there. That was like one of my favorite movies of the year, and because David O. Russell obviously has a knack for this familial drama, the relationships between these characters, and whether it's based on his own personal experience or whatever, he obviously has a knack for bringing out the best in these actors to make them really connect to each other. Was there anything else you wanted to add, Wally?
Well, see, I know a family who's been touched by both bipolar disorder and OCD. person in question has severe and it kind of it's one of those things that when you get to know somebody who's got this particular type of mental illness, with me it pisses me off when people say like, oh, that's just my OCD, kicking in. I'm like, no, you have no idea just exactly how profound this can affect somebody's life. Like, you just wanted to have your thing straight is that's not OCD. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Just because you want all the you don't believe something terrible is gonna happen if you don't do this, so stop. Like, and it drives me nuts. Like, my own family's kind of guilty of this right now, and I'm like, no, you don't understand. This is actually like a big deal. This is like,
Yeah, I mean, people trivialize it all the time and just say, "Oh, that's just him being OCD or something like that." It really, trivializes it. It's not
when
good.
you know somebody who's got actual OCD and lost their job because of it, that's that it when people say because an offhanded remark, it can can kind of raise it. But they did it perfectly. Robert De Niro is not a severe case, but he does have all the he acts with all the trappings of someone, because he does, if the remote control is not like this, if it is not like this, if it is not like this, then something bad is going to happen. And in this case, it'll be he loses money on his bet.
Yeah, or the his team loses a game and he'll point to that as, the reason, because you weren't here, or you're my lucky charm, and
And Bradley Cooper plays plays the manic depressive side, incredibly well as well, especially in the opening scene where he's reading Hemingway, and
throws the book
hucks
out
the
the
book out the
window.
window, but then wakes his parents up at 3 in the morning to talk to
Yeah.
basically he just rants. He just goes on a rambling, like trying to explain to like what he's thinking, because
Yeah.
he's on a manic high. So I mean, I thought these were rather well portrayed by and seeing it around me, not personally, not me myself. I mean, I know people who have these particular disorders, and seeing it pretty transparent, like, oh, that's pretty accurate, actually.
And he's really able to balance the drama of this with the humor, because there's a lot of funny moments in this movie.
Well, some of well, I think some of there are definitely funny moments. I mean, some of the ones that where I thought really made me laugh and crack up. And usually I don't laugh at stuff like this, but I thought it was pretty funny. Is how he I mean, he's trying to get in shape for his wife that he's separated from, and he's running. And like each of those times that Jennifer Lawrence just pops up out of nowhere and starts like chasing him and stuff like that. Like I thought that was hilarious. Like where she just like, hey, and she just comes out of nowhere, and you're just like, what the fuck? And he's like, what the hell? Where the hell did you just come from? And like, I thought, that stuff was kind of funny. And the Chris Tucker stuff, how he keeps kind
Showing
of,
up.
I don't know if it's a spoiler, but like he keeps kind of just showing up, and the reason behind why he's showing up, and how he's not supposed to be there and stuff like that, I thought was pretty hilarious.
Some trivia on IMDb. David O. Russell was drawn to the story because of the family relationships, and also because of the connection to his own son, who is bipolar and has OCD.
Yep,
So,
that can be pretty devastating. I
yeah.
also love Bradley Cooper's vulnerability in this, because when he meets, whenever he's dealing with whenever Pat is dealing with Tiffany, he always seems unsure of himself. Like, I'm not sure what to do. What do I do in this situation? Like, when he they he's running and she chases him down. He's like, "Do you want to have dinner at this diner?" Like, he's like, "Just happens. Like, I just happen to be at the right place at the right time." Like, oh, maybe she wants to do this. But then on his date, what is he order? Raisin Bran, because he still doesn't know what to do. But he's trying to be tactical. Like, if I order Raisin Bran, it's not a date.
I
It's
also feel
fine.
like he kind of used her as a way to kind of like just maybe pump himself up a little bit, because he looks at her as someone that's more messed up than he is.
And that's
Because
explored too, because
yeah,
she finds
because
that out.
yeah, she does find that out, and I like that, they actually went there like and discussed that, because you could kind of see it, because he's looking at her and he's like, wow, this girl's even more messed up than I am. And he's not really looking at her, like he's kind of looking past her, like he's still very focused on trying to get back
So you
together
can see
with
the people. You can also
what
see
is
it with
it?
the camera too, because the people in the background, you can see all their reactions.
Yep. And like he's with her, but it's just kind of like he's not trying to really spark up a relationship or anything. It's not like the typical, romantic comedy trappings where it's like, oh, obviously these two are going to get together, and it's so obvious where this movie's going. I don't think it is. Like, I think that he's not really trying to get with her and try to spark something up. He's still very focused on his goal, which is to try to get back together with his wife.
So one thing that I do want to kind of criticize this movie about is its cinematography, and I didn't find it very interesting at all, because it's funny, if you follow Twitter or any other film talk, there's been a lot of complaints about Tom Hooper's direction in Les Miserables about all the close-ups, and We had posted something on Twitter saying if all those people needed complaining about the close-ups in Les Miserables, need to take another look at Silver Linings Playbook, because just about every shot of a character
The talking head.
is their face, right up in the screen. Now, and I didn't I found it a bit distracting as the movie went on. I didn't think it was a technique that was being used to put you right into the emotion of the character. I just found it being used without any regard over time. I don't know if you guys saw the same thing.
No, I actually kind of, I kind of got a, I got a different thing out of that out of you. I mean, than you did. With those, up close, just talking headshots, it draws to me. It drew my focus to, directly to the person speaking, and I mean, I'm not sure this is just an accidental thing, but I saw a movie a number of years back about a character who's got autism, who only like whenever the character is looking at somebody who's talking, you only see their eye or like their mouth in close up, and that kind of reminded me of that. Not that the camera's trying to like the cinematography is trying to emulate autism, but that sheer ones that singular focus that that a manic-depressive person can have at times, like Bradley Cooper's his sole thing, I want to get back with my wife, and everything that he does is all on this
Yeah, but wouldn't
thing.
that be more effective if they showed that from his point of view, focusing on whatever he was looking at, as opposed to the camera being on his face?
Yeah, but I think that's also too. He's talking to somebody who also has a singular focus, like Jennifer Lawrence's character. She obviously wants to tell him something. In the movie, Robert De Niro's got his singular focus of winning his books, and spending time with his son. And those scenes that it's there. The whoever's doing the whoever's doing whoever's in that subjective scene. That's their singular focus. So when he's in the diner with Jennifer Lawrence, she's looking at him, and that's all you see. And when he's talking to her, he sees her, but the camera is the it's open, so you can see the people behind him. So he's like Hermano said, he's looking through her, not directly at her. But later on, when he's talking to her, she feels the frame again, and there's nothing behind her. It's usually like the wall or something is blurred out in the background.
Good point.
Yeah, I actually didn't have an issue with the way the film was shot or the way it looked. I thought it suited the way it was shot. It suited the movie. Like, I also like the way it looked. It kind of looked like it was shot like on like VHS or something like that. Like, it wasn't an overly polished
Yeah,
looking
The Fighter
movie.
had a similar
Yeah, just
feel.
kind of like this. It was almost like a home movie or something. You're watching like a home movie or something like that. Like, it just it, like a slightly degraded look, and I thought it fit. I mean. The look of the movie, and I actually liked the way it was shot towards the end at the dance competition. I thought it was pretty well done, and like there were these shots where the camera just zooms away all of a sudden, like it's on some kind of like dolly or car or something like that. Like I thought a lot of those shots were pretty cool. You usually don't see them in movies like that.
Was there anything else you guys want to mention? Should we get into spoilers for any reason, or?
We can just we'll just be on the safe side. How about some spoilers?
Sure. Spoilers. Wally, was there anything you want to mention?
Well, let's see. I'm trying to think of something I may have mentioned that wasn't a spoiler
Well,
already.
let me say actually, the dance competition at the
I
end.
loved that.
That was a very funny moment when the scorecards are coming up, and then they realize,
They go
that
five
it
point
does
one.
average to a five,
Yep.
which was the, basis of all this bet,
And why are they so happy with a
I
five?
know that was a
Yeah.
really well done, funny moment.
I just thought that they set it up. It was very typical. Right at that point, like there's no way they're gonna end this movie on a sad note. You just know it's gonna happen. And like they even try to set up. They show a few of the dance routines before theirs, and you see that there's one really tough judge, and she's given all these really great performances, like pretty low scores, and you're just like, all right, like come on, man, you're gonna show me.
She has a change of
Yeah,
heart.
she has a change of heart, and she's like, oh, she gives all of a sudden with their performance, she gives the highest score. And I'm like, kind of cliche a little bit. Like, oh, the tough judge was won over by the determination and their effort.
Also, a lot of the motivation of Bradley Cooper's, well, the only motivation of Bradley Cooper's character in this movie is his reconnection with his wife, that he wants to reconnect with her. And that's the driving force of this movie, of him in this movie. And I thought the payoff was pretty weak at the end when he finally sees her, and I don't know, she just did.
Well,
I didn't get why she was even there. What would compel her to when Julia Stiles says, "Hey, will you come to this dance competition? He's gonna be here." What would compel her to be there? If she's never had any connection,
you mean you're speaking about his wife?
correct.
Yeah, okay.
She hasn't had any connection because this letter that you thought was delivered to her, but was actually not by
Written,
Jennifer Lawrence,
yeah.
so there has actually been no connection between,
Well,
contact
the
at
entire
all.
movie leads you to believe that she wants. I mean, everyone in the movie pretty much leads you to believe that that his wife wants nothing to do with
Yeah,
him.
so what would motivate her to go to this dance
Yeah,
competition?
but.
And then ultimately, why does she react so in such a placid manner when they see each other? And at the end, when he speaks in her ear and obviously says, I found another woman. I guess I don't need to be with you," or whatever he said,
Yeah, well, I mean, it's implied that she doesn't want anything to do with him. Like, you only hear about the court order and the restraining order and all that because of what happened. When I'm going to talk about that scene in a second, to with between Bradley Cooper and his wife. But now keep in mind, she is best friends with the wife of his best friend. So obviously they're talking about him. Like, he's doing this dance thing. He's doing really well. Like he's a different person now, and now she's gonna want to come to see what he's become. You know what I mean? Even though that you don't know if there's any actual love lost because you don't see her get upset. You see her kind of taking it all in. Like, this is the man that I married that I wanted to see all of these things before, and now I'm watching it. And if you even watch the dancing is kind of reminiscent
Oh,
of the relationship.
their routine is completely symmetrical with their own personalities and their disorders. It's so up and down.
And their relationship, because it
Right.
starts off as a waltz,
Yep.
you know what I mean, and then it
Goes
goes
into the
into it
Titanic.
goes in, then it goes
And
into
that's
like
the white
the white
stripes.
stripes, and then it goes into the synchronized tap dancing, and then the awkward super
Right.
awesome finishing
The
move
finishing move.
that doesn't work, but it's but then like they're together at the end, you know what I mean, like it's all this kind of built up to this one dance routine that kind of mirrors what's been going on between Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley
Right.
Cooper this whole time.
As far as Bradley Cooper's wife showing up, I don't know if you guys felt this, but I always felt like everyone he didn't know, like he was constantly trying to like reach out to her, and this restraining order was in place, but you never got the sense that it never really ever showed her physically interact with him and say, "I don't want you around here." It was always what people were
I was
referring
always
to him.
wondering if there was something else that hidden, that
Yeah.
maybe she was actually dead or something like
Or
that.
like, yeah, you didn't really know. Like, there was a little sense of mystery because you were only really being told, like, Bradley Cooper was told by his parents, she doesn't want anything to do with you, don't go bother her. I felt like maybe they were trying to protect him because they didn't feel like he was ready yet.
Or I was
Yeah.
expecting some kind of real twist at the end, he didn't remember actually killing her during that scene, and that there
That
would be
would
a
have
big
been,
reveal at the end,
yeah, that would
That
have
would've
been
been
nuts.
pretty.
That would have been pretty nuts, and it would have been made for a much darker ending. But yeah, I never really went that way, but I just felt like it was just what people were telling him. You never, all it was word of mouth. You didn't actually ever get to see on screen her telling him, "I don't want to see you," or "go away." I feel like he was just being sort of cradled and protected by the people around him to not just go right now because you just literally got out. Don't just rush out there. Wait, give it some time. Everyone is pretty much telling him, give it some time. You never know what could happen, and he was just kind of really not hearing that and just really trying to progress things, forward a lot more quickly than he probably should have.
Which leads me to the reasoning behind why Bradley Cooper was put in the institution in the first place.
Beating the shit out of
Because if you walked in on on your I know you're in a if you walked in on your wife in a shower with another man while your wedding song is playing, and the other man tells you in your own house
That
you
you
should
should
probably
leave.
go, how does he survive that? Because I mean,
It's a very sympathetic moment.
exactly, I'm sitting there going, oh yeah, I know what I would do. I'd beat the shit out of him right then and there.
And you're not even an undiagnosed
I
bipolar
know.
disorder, having dude. So like,
Exactly. I think anybody who walked in on such and it was told that wouldn't be like, oh well, yeah, I guess I should go. You guys carry on there without me.
I mean, Yeah, I can't imagine that too many people would have reacted that much differently. I mean, no one's gonna leave,
Yeah.
obviously, but
And they also show, they only show that fight scene in like really quick snippets. Like it in quick flashes as he's, trying to calm down during a scene where he hears the music in his head.
Was there anything else you guys want to mention before we get into grades?
No, I
Nope,
think we
that was
pretty
it.
much covered it all.
Wally, great.
I give it an A.
A minus.
I give it a B plus, so that's an A minus average.
A minus average.
Fair enough. Surprising for all three of us, I think, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. I'm most. Trust me, I'm most surprised that I liked it because I typically. I mean, I remember I mentioned it to Tim, but you guys both liked Crazy Stupid Love
Loved
quite a
it. Yeah,
bit.
I love that movie.
See, that is typical of the type of movie I thought I was going to get, and I got exactly that from Crazy Stupid Love, and I was like, this is the type of movie I absolutely do not like because it's so the absolute typical romantic comedy to me. And Silver Linings Playbook absolutely was the antithesis of that. Like, it was everything I thought I was going to get, but I didn't. I got something completely different. I mean, for the most part.
Yeah.
All right. That does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers at twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
That rolls right off your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
That sounded creepy.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch, send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be talking about the 1956 John Ford classic, The Searchers. I think it's on all of our lists of shame, right?
I,
Yes,
you know, I guess I didn't know the movie didn't exist until you mentioned it, actually.
sir.
So, yeah, I
Very
guess
good.
so. First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch.
So how about now? Do I sound pretty good? Oh shit.
Okay.
So Hermano, you must have a crazy story that you can share with us.
Don't have any crazy
There
stories.
has to be some story you can share with us. You're back,
I
motherfucker.
got no crazy stories. I wish I did.
How you sleeping?
Not very good.
I was reading about that last night. I was like, I wonder how Amano is sleeping. Because I'm reading about it seems that baby baking is all the articles I read about it says your life is essentially over at this point.
I don't agree.
I would have to disagree too. I mean, they make it sound like it's like this Herculean impossible task.
It's not. I mean, by far the worst is lack of sleep.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've been getting 5 hours, maybe not 5 hours in a row, but I do get, at least 5 hours of sleep a night. I'll
But
get like 2 hours here, 2 hours there.
in
You're doing an hour.
lack of sleep, it's all worth it though, right?
You guys
Oh
doing any,
yeah,
you guys doing any
I'm not
shifts?
complaining at all. Well, not really right now
Reach
because
over and just be put you pick her hand up while she's sitting and go, it's your turn.
tag, you're it. No, mostly the baby wants her now for obvious reasons.
For food. Mother, you are my sustenance.
I cannot do anything except throw the baby.
You cheer him on, yeah, come on, baby. Eat up.
And Wally, you look like a ninja.
I do look like an I feel like Bane right now. I wish I could have drawn on this freaking mask. That's because I'll probably explain it at the beginning of the podcast.
Okay.
That looks like Shredder's mouth from Ninja Turtles.
Nice. Very good call.
I should wear like a helmet so I could be like, this is not Walter, this is Oroku Saki. All right, this is a really lame B-roll though.
No, it's not.